This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome, everybody, to The Psychologists Are In. I am Maggie Lawson, and we are so excited about this podcast. I played Juliet O'Hara on the show for 8 years, and we are thrilled to go back and relive this wild, wonderful, beautiful, crazy, funny adventure that we all got to have together. In this episode, it's just you and me, Tim. We talk all about how we got our roles on Psych, how we became the best of friends, and we focus on season one, episode three, Speak Now or Forever Hold Your Peace.
Hey, Maggie.
Hey, this is our podcast talking about Psych, rewatching Psych, but really just us telling our fun stories about Psych while we also rewatch episodes for fun.
I love both those things, or all those things.
Love all those things. Love each other, which is also super cool. We're going to start talking with Speak Now or Forever Hold Your Peace.
Peace. But the joke here is how peace is spelled.
Correct. P-I-E-C-E.
Meaning, for those of you who, I'm sure you're all getting this. So it's like, you know, your gun, your peace.
Your peace.
As opposed to your Om peace.
Your Om peace. Your peace in your heart.
Om
peace. That's not the peace we're talking about on Psych.
We're talking about that kind of peace.
We're talking about that kind of peace. And I was just about to say, I think even our titles are like all these funny play on words. Speak Now was my very first episode of Psych because of how we shot The Order that year. So even though we aired Spelling Bee second, we actually shot it third. And
which means it's the first time I got to work with my dear friend Maggie Lawson. I got to be
and that's when I met
Maggie Lawson
you.
On set.
Yeah. I remember I was like kind of I was a little intimidated by you at first because I thought you were so good. Like, we'd done the rehearsal and you were like, you were so good and so like serious detective. And I felt like I was like dressing up in my dad's suits. Like, what, who saw me as a detective for this part? And which is funny because that's kind of our characters anyway. But that day in the church. The day in the church when we went to do our scene, when James is about to do his big breakdown, and we kind of hang out in the back of this church, and we have a couple of lines that we exchange, and we'd rehearsed it, and we'd met at that point. We'd had like a dinner and like some social stuff, and I think you had come to set, you said, one day when I was shooting something with James. Yeah. And
I appeared in the diner scene, the scene where Juliet and Sean first really meet and have their first flirtation in the diner.
Yes, but that airs in Spelling Bee. And so...
See, I can't even keep track.
The first time we meet... No, that's when our characters... That's when you connect us together, right? Is in Spelling Bee in that
actually,
scene.
Actually, no, we our characters don't even connect it. It's like I just happen to be on scene that day.
Yeah.
Lassiter comes in at the very end to arrest the guy.
Yeah, exactly. And then...
But
in,
more importantly...
More importantly, what?
The first time that Lassiter and O'Hara actually get to work together, the kernel of that amazing relationship that comes out for these two characters.
Began in Speak Now. So Speak Now was actually my first episode. My first episode of the series. And it was, I believe, the first day of shooting this episode back. The first scene of the first day was when we met.
Was it really?
Yes, Tim. You know this.
I mean, I obviously know the day we met, but I'm trying to, I don't know if it was the first scene, the first day that all.
It was the first, I was like, wait, why are we doing the first scene on the first day of shooting this episode back? Because it was all the church stuff, you know, when Sean has his big breakdown and it was toward the end. It's right when we come into the back of the church at one point, and the way they had set it up was like, we come in, we have like a little exchange. It was a really quick pop off, and it was like the first scene we did. Back. And I remember meeting you. Well, we had met at a dinner, I guess. We had met at a dinner, I think, like earlier that week. And everyone was talking about how great. They were like, he's so good. He's so perfect as Lassiter. And I'm like, but Lassiter's mean. I mean, we can both tell this story, but I remember that I think probably the first thing you said to me ever, which was, what are you going to do? Before we rehearse, as we rehearse the scene.
Yeah, we're about to walk in the door to the back of the chapel.
Yeah. We're about to walk in the door. You looked at me and you were like, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. Hmm? And you were like, are you going to act the shit out of it? And I was like, oh, yeah. I'm going to act the shit out of it. What are you going to do? And you're like, going to act the shit out of it.
Yeah, act the shit out of it.
And then we were off and running for 8 years.
For those who were not on set with us, for 8 years and all the years after that and all the movies, almost before pretty much every one of our scenes, our camera operator, Marco Ciccone.
Marco,
we go, hey, Tim, what are you going to do? Like, I'm going to act the shit out of it. And then Ariel said to you. And then we would proceed to then act the shit out of for 120 episodes worth of shitting acting.
We still... Shitting acting. We still say that to each other.
Yes, we do.
All the time. Well, just like this. It's like, Tim, what are you going to do? Are you going to podcast the shit out of it?
You know, Maggie, I'm going to podcast the shit out of it. I wasn't sure I was going to, but this episode, I'm really going to podcast the shit out of it.
Yeah, we're both podcasting the shit out of it. I feel like Speak Now was so many magical things happened. And also, I feel like when I think about, I think James said it, you know, in his pod as well, like all of the things that had to happen, all the factors in our lives that brought us kind of to that moment, it's kind of insane when you think about it. It's like the lightning strike, even though it wasn't a lightning strike. I mean, Steve found all of us and put us all together. Should we do a little breakdown of what happens in Speak Now? Oh, Mrs. Pickles, that is one of my favorite bits of all time. Okay.
is that the first time Mrs. Pickles comes out?
That's the first. No, actually, Mrs. Pickles, isn't Mrs. Pickles mentioned in the pilot? I think Mrs. Pickles is mentioned in the pilot. I feel like I connected that. And we've mentioned Mrs. Pickles. No, I think this is the first time Mrs. Pickles. Sorry, guys, you follow me on this, but because Mrs. Pickles makes another appearance in Scary Sherry, right?
Do they go into Lady's door and come out crying and, as the subterfuge to get in the house?
Right.
I can't remember which episode it was.
We called that one was Scary Sherry, but this one is when he has to fake a call from work because his cat is sick. It's Mrs. Pickles. Anyway, so. That's a fun little trivia. Mrs. Pickles appears in multiple episodes, season one. Not the actual Mrs. Pickles, but by name. Wait, I want to hear, Tim, tell me all about I've probably heard it a million times, but your process in becoming Lassiter and your auditioning and your casting. I know we talked a little about it with Steve, but I want everybody to tell their story.
The process for me becoming Lassiter's. Honestly, it's one thing. It's putting on the shoulder holster.
That's it. That's all.
That's it. And then boom, I put the shoulder holster on and
you're Lassiter.
I'm Lassiter. There was talk early on in the episodes of like, are we, because the shoulder holster make kind of, the gun kind of made my suits go bulge out on the side and look a little wonky. Mm-hmm. And one of our producers one day was like, maybe we don't use the gun. I'm like, no. We always have the gun. Lassiter always has his gun on him.
That's like the icing on the cake for you. You get dressed, you come in, you do your thing, but once you put that holster on, you're like, okay, I'm him now.
Because I'm not that good of an actor, so I need to, like, that's my one talisman. It's like, I need that shoulder holster.
I get it.
And the sit-ups.
I guess for me and Juliet, that would have been heels because I mean, that feels like such a silly thing. Or maybe my badge. No, I didn't even have my badge. I was the first to be like, unsightly bulge in my suit. No, thanks. I'll only wear a gun and a holster when I absolutely have to.
One of my favorite gags on set was I was like, hey, Maggie, what's your gun? Because you never had it.
Never.
Did I get you my purse?
And yet it would like just magically appear in scenes where I needed it. I sometimes would just make it, I would just sort of hold my hand behind my back and then I would be like, oh, look, I had my gun there the whole time, but I didn't. I remember we were instantly so at ease with each other. Like, and it was funny because I remember thinking after a little while, like when I read for Juliet, all of my test scenes, all of my scenes were with James. But, you know, that became like sort of a will they or won't they thing for a very long time. And I remember I was like, man, all of my scenes are with you. I'm surprised actually that I didn't have to like test with you. I think that's what I was so nervous about in the beginning was like, oh man, this relationship really has to work. And
no, you're absolutely right.
You know what I mean? Like we had every scene. Yeah.
Well, I think what it was, Max, was I think they didn't realize that necessarily. It wasn't apparent on the page.
Right.
Until the magic of you and I together on that O'Hara Lassiter relationship suddenly just popped, I think, off the screen.
Yeah.
So I think in writing it, they wouldn't necessarily go.
It, you're right. Oh, yeah. In the script, it didn't seem that way.
Really kind of hit, and then it just snowballed into that amazing magic relationship we had.
Let's do an episode description, just because we do have to talk about Speak Now. Let's do it. Okay, when Sean and Gus crash a wedding, in an attempt to retrieve an antique wedding ring stolen from a secure vault, they discover that it is not only a theft that they're investigating. I actually thought this episode was super funny. I remember when James did his psychic breakdown. So because it was my first episode, I wasn't on the pilot and I didn't get to see sort of what he does or how he works or whatever. And I remember because it was very quiet. He was like, the first couple of days he had so much to do because we had to do all that church stuff where he like has the breakdown and like whatever. That he was like really, really quiet and really reserved, like really thinking. You could see him like working all this stuff out. And then he goes to do it and it's like a choreographed dance and it's flawless. Like,
and pages of dialogue.
Pages and pages of dialogue. And people don't know this, but in our early scripts, actually I think in most scripts, all it would say, because everyone just trusted James so much, was Sean has a psychic episode. And the rest of it came from Rodet. Like he would turn it into whatever it was as he was breaking it down, which is like usually 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 pages of dialogue, or at least like him just speaking, breaking down an entire thing. And then having to like do these theatrical, like I said, like choreographed, elaborate dances or acting out the characters that are involved in the crime, like the people involved in the crime, whatever. I remember being completely blown away.
I remember us standing outside the chapel about to go in before I said the famous, what are you going to do, Maggie? And him like looking at his sides and just going like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. I don't have this.
Yes.
And this is when I realized like he's a photograph, almost like a photographic memory.
Yeah,
and
he could glance at it once.
Going into the back of that chapel and watching him deliver this. What felt like a 45-minute-long monologue.
Unbelievable.
And thank God for the breakdowns, because I never understood the episodes.
I remember.
Like, you know, we would like text each other and like, first speed of sight to each other.
So do you
like,
know what happens?
Who did it? What happened? You
understand this? Oh, my God. The writers are going to hate us for saying that. But yes, I did. I remember being like, oh, okay. Great. This all makes sense.
We watched the breakdowns and be like, oh, that's what happened. Thank God.
Which is actually very much like our characters, because I feel like we were always the ones being like, okay, let's get all the facts and let's figure it out and we're going to know our lines and whatever. We're like, they're like, you know, breaking it down, whatever. Psychically, they have all the answers. So by the end of the episode, we actually did learn from them what happened, or learn from James what happened. So, Tim, tell me when you first read for Lassiter. Well, we talked to Steve, and Steve had mentioned, like, from the time you came into the room, it was yours. Like, there was nobody else.
I paid Steve a lot of money to say that in the last time.
You guys, gaps in the diet should not be ignored. Over 97% of women aged 19 to 50 are not getting enough vitamin D from their diet, and 95% are not getting enough their daily recommended intake of key omega-3s. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin was formulated by exhaustive research to help fill nutrient gaps in the diets of women ages 18 plus. Someone had to do it. Glad it wasn't me. It is formulated with nutrients to help support brain health, bone health, blood health, and provide antioxidant support. Essential for Women 18 Plus was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in 12 weeks. In normal, less sciencey terms, that means it's good and it works. We deserve to know what we're putting in our bodies and why, especially when it comes to something that we're taking every day. Personally, I love that this multivitamin was female-founded. Plus, all of the ingredients are traceable, so I know what I'm putting in my body. Right now, Ritual is offering listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/pineapple and turn healthy habits into a ritual. That's 10% off at ritual.com/pineapple. You guys, multivitamin the shit out of it. So you still had to test, right? You tested with Rodé.
I did test with Rodé, and I told the story before, but I'll tell it again. So for those of you who don't know, the test is always a super, super duper high pressure situation where you're going and you're reading for all the executives and network people to see whether you get them. Like, it's your final audition. And I go through Rodé, and Rodé, I didn't realize this at the time because it was the first time I ever met him. He likes to go off script, shall we say, and improvise. If you're improvising in the room. And I was like almost totally lost, and I wanted to kill him because he was improvising and
almost in the middle of your audition. Yeah.
My test, and I was like, "You son of a bitch!" So I finish my scene. I go outside, and they like wait for 10 minutes. And Steve comes out, and there's like to give me a note to go back and read again. He's like, "Okay, here's the note. We're not sure that you're tough enough to handle Rodé or to handle this character. So can you like beef it up a little bit? Maybe they wanted a little more laster anger."
Uh-huh. Which is so funny to me.
Which plays in this episode. So,
Yeah.
She was like, "Can you maybe be a little harsher with him?" I'm like, "Oh, just watch this." But I went to the room and I wanted to pin him against the wall. I was so angry at him. So what started to be this huge thing where I wanted to kill him ended up being an amazing gift in that, because I was so charged and pissed off. that angry laughter came out naturally.
That's awesome.
And I got the job, and 120 episodes later, and three of six.
I don't know what it is. What are we saying now?
I think it's 3 of 6.
Three of six. I'm going to say 3 of 10. Did the pilot, so you have. I don't have that experience, but I want to know what happened. So, how long do you remember? How long you had to wait from shooting the pilot to? Like, how long was it until you found out it got picked up and that it was going to a series? Yeah.
I do remember that. I do remember that I got the call from Steve very quickly that I got the job. I was driving, which normally sometimes you have to like wait days. In this case, it was maybe 20 minutes.
Oh my God.
I was on Hillhurst and I got this call. So I pulled over because I don't use your phone and drive at the same time.
Safety first, kids. Safety first.
Safety never takes a holiday.
Richard Coleman. We love you,
Richard. Lovely call from Steve saying, you know, you're the guy, and this is going to be super fun. And Steve going, you know, just so you know, this is going to be a really family show and like a family atmosphere. And he's like, "I'm not Hollywood. I don't live in Hollywood. I'm not a Hollywood guy," which could not be closer to the truth.
Oh, yeah.
Because Steve is like just one of the most grounded, sweetest men you'd ever hope to meet.
Yep.
I think the next thing I know, I was on a plane to Vancouver.
For people who don't know the process, like a pilot, well, depending, this was USA. So it's a little different than with network. With network, usually, you know, you shoot a pilot in what they call like pilot season, which is like, you know, February to April. And then in May, there are these big announcements on like what shows are getting picked up. And so usually the wait time is only like a month or so to know if your show is going to get picked up. But Yeah, that's why I was wondering if it was different then, because I know even with cable and stuff now, it can be longer from the time you actually shoot the pilot. I know some people saying it's like 6 months, a year. Yeah. And then it all happens really quick, though, after that. Like, right? Like, I feel like it's like, okay, here, you're
I feel
now
like
you're...
We, I think I auditioned in August, which was weird because it was kind of, it wasn't pilot season.
Mm-hmm.
It was a weird time. I think it was, and then I know we were up there in the fall. Because it was snow on the ground at during some scenes for the pilot.
Oh, that's right.
My career was at a time when I tested for psych, I had not tested for a job in like 8 years. Like I just never was.
Whoa.
I was never successful testing.
Really?
So this was the first. Yeah, I was always like, I'd come on for like one episode or something, and it would turn into like I'd become like a major recurring character. That was always kind of my MO was always sort of like sliding into this or popping into the side door.
Yep.
I just felt like I'm never going to get a job food test because it was just one of those things where like they're always going for like I don't know younger beef you're good looking dudes.
Tim, you're the handsomest. You're the handsomest of all the handsomes.
I really do.
And I'm saying it for free, so take that, Steve Franks. Anyway, we'll have dinner anyway. Okay, so. You were saying you never felt like you had a lot of success in the testing process. It was you slid in. You didn't.
It's like
right.
I was not getting jobs through tests ever.
Right. Fascinating. You're so good. Like, I can't. That's fascinating. So after you found out it was getting picked up, I love telling. So you move. Didn't the first season your whole family come up? Didn't you all get a house? And I mean, Lily and Nora were so young.
Yeah, my kids were. Nora was in preschool in Vancouver. My whole family came up. My wife Allison and my daughters Lily and Nora. And I'd gone up like a week before to try and figure out where we were going to live, and I couldn't find a place to live. So I just drove around this one neighborhood called Kitts Point, which is this really beautiful area. And I thought maybe I'm just going to go to where I want to live and see if I can find a place. And I turned this one corner. Remember that? You remember that house I was living in?
I do. It was downstairs. Guys were the lower level.
It was like a basement apartment of this beautiful old craftsman that some railroad baron built.
It was so beautiful.
And right across from the dog beach. And so I drove this area where I thought maybe I'll get lucky. And I literally turned a corner and saw a sign for rent. I was like, oh, that's it. I looked around, it was this area right next to Kitts Beach, which is parks and beach and lovely. And so we had two small kids. Sometimes we work all the time. So like, where can I go where Allison can just like take the kids outside and play and not be stuck trying to figure out what to do? So I just locked in this spot that Maggie came to visit us many times.
Yes, I remember it.
She was coming through my kitchen window.
Oh, I remember that picture too. Oh, good. My God. Wait, were you all there a couple seasons?
No,
or was that just one? Just for season one? Okay. Oh, I remember that house
dog,
so
Betty, with me.
Well.
Little Betty,
Betty
was there.
Wait, Betty and Sally, right?
I don't remember Sally came with us that first season.
Okay. But, we all know each other's dogs. We are a very, very dog-friendly set, and they were almost like the extended family characters. I mean, Tristan... She was at set with me. Oh yeah, and Betty came with you to set. Tristan would come with me. She was actually a little bulldog for bulldogs, but she would come to set. And Dan Miller, who at the time was our third AD, I mean, he became family to us. Even over that first season, I remember there were so many times I was working on set. He had to come check on Tristan for me and take care of Tristan for me when she was in my trailer. And Dan Miller ended up from season one to season eight of Psych working his way into first AD. He is now one of the most sought after first ADs in Vancouver. But and one of the greatest, greatest people.
Love Dan Miller. Hi, Dano.
Hi, Dan Miller. We'll talk more about Dan over. We'll have Dan on the podcast. We have to have Dan on the podcast.
Oh, we have to.
Oh my gosh, we should get him. Actually, we have to get Dan Miller for season one because he can tell the stories. Dan Miller, I think, turned 21 during.
I remember very well his 21st birthday.
His 21st birthday was completely nuts. I do believe he had 2 40-ounce bottles of beer taped to his hands.
He did.
Remember that? I remember walking in the morning and he was like, hey, guys. That's right. Oh, my God. That's how amazing Dan Miller is. He's the most fun and so wonderful and so loving. He took care of all of us, took care of our animals and everything. Yeah, so you had Betty. So your whole family was up. We still managed, I feel like, to all party a lot first season, even as much as we were working and with families there. That we all learned about each other, I feel like, very quickly.
We all immediately liked each other and want to hang out.
All the time.
Which is such a rare, rare thing on a show.
I mean, it was like lightning striking. That's what I always say that. And then I think it wasn't Steve, one of the things he said in the interview was that he had like a no a-hole policy. So he was like, I really do with what you just said about him, Tim, being like the nicest, sweetest, you know, he was such he is like a big kid in a lot of ways. So his like joy and his excitement is so infectious. And he like selected all of us and we like got to Vancouver. And I remember it was this like immediate, I think the first dinner we all had together was just like, oh, okay, we're going to be hopefully locked in for a while. But I do believe at the time, the only person who had ever had a second season of a show was Dulay.
That makes sense.
Which is why
I hadn't at that point.
No, I hadn't either.
That cast was lightning in a bottle.
From the very beginning, it was, as you said, it's so rare. And I often like talk about it. Like, I think a lot of times when you have something so special like that happen, you years later, you think back like, oh man, I wish we knew how good we had it at the time, but we did. I feel like we didn't take any of it for granted. I feel like we made the most, even if we had guest stars or people coming up, we wanted to take them out and invite them into the family and have like such a good time. It was so immediate.
It was 8 seasons, not a bad word between any of us that I ever saw.
No, like in the complete opposite. I love the smells of the season. Thanks to Native's new seasonal scents, my favorites are with me wherever I go. Yes, I'm talking about their deodorant. Native deodorant is formulated with ingredients you have actually heard of, like coconut oil and shea butter. Native deodorant never uses aluminum, parabens, or sulfates, but still keeps you smelling amazingly fresh all day long. With classics and rotating seasonals, Native has a deodorant scent for everyone, including their new holiday-inspired collection. 'Tis the season for yummy-smelling armpits. Native offers 3 new delectable new scents, candy cane, sugar cookie, and fresh mistletoe. Native is not just good for you, it's good for the planet. They have a deodorant made of 100% paperboard packaging. They are vegan, and they never test on animals. I'm not alone in loving Native. They have over 15,000 five-star reviews. And I know you're going to love them too. Personally, I like the mistletoe flavor mistletoe scent, because who doesn't love a little mistletoe? And also, I like it when I can understand what the ingredients are and also very close to my heart that they do not test on animals. I absolutely love this. Keep the scents of the season with you with Native's limited time holiday scented deodorants. Go to nativedeodorant.com and use code PINEAPPLE to get 20% off your first purchase at checkout. That's nativedeodorant.com, code PINEAPPLE for 20% off. Nativedeodorant.com, code PINEAPPLE.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Oh my gosh, I'm just remembering. What didn't somebody say, call me a show killer in an article? Remember, it was like Maggie Lawson at that point. Okay, so coming into Psych, I had done a couple of series that, like, one, I think, went 13 episodes and was done, and then another one had gone 13 episodes and was done, and I found out it had just been canceled, and I was devastated. And also, you know, at that point where you're like, ah, like, you almost feel like you're getting, like, tagged with something, like a, you know, do not hire, or she's bad luck, or... I don't know.
Show killer. I'm going to find that. I'm going to now Google Maggie Lawson psych show.
No, it really was somebody.
I'm going to find that journalist and destroy them.
This is like 2005, by the way, or six. It was like it was like because this is before social media. So it had to be an article or something, unless it was like MySpace at that time. But anyway, and not only was I down, I was like super embarrassed. And I remember, like, just in general, and I think there were, like, some auditions and things that were happening, but, and I remember going to a party with my boyfriend at the time, and I saw this, like, executive, I believe she's still at Fox, love her. She's like, how are you? What's happening? Sorry to hear about the show, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, my little 25-year-old self, I just said, you know, what can I do? I feel like I had actually
stop killing shows.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going out for some stuff right now. I had been out on a few things and I remember like just not feeling good. And then I felt like I was just off my game. And she looked at me and she was like, can I be totally honest with you? And I was like, yeah. She's like, don't do another half hour right now. Like, just don't. You've done a lot. Do something else. And I was kind of like gutted because I love doing half hour comedy, but I was also a little bit like, shit, will anybody even see me for that? Like I felt like I had been so put in a category at that point of like, which and a category I liked, but at the same time, so I when I got the script for Psych, while funny, it was a more serious role. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, if I could be a part of the, like, I read this magical script and I was like, this, well, they're not even going to see me for this. Like, I can't even imagine. And at this point it had been picked up. So that was the other like kind of bonus with it was like, oh, this is a show that's already on the air. I'm like, they're going to hire some serious detective girl for this, you know?
The crazy thing about you being unsure or less than superly confident about this is, ladies and gentlemen, viewers, darling viewers, when Maggie Lawson appeared on our set and came to our group, it was like, oh, this is the missing piece of the puzzle we've been waiting for.
That is so like she, sweet.
No, like literally the heavens opened up and the rays of sunshine hit us. And like, no, your energy was just so needed on our, for our show. And really, no, it was what our show needed. And it just like our cast is kind of glued together.
We still are.
Exactly. Isn't it? It's just, it really blows my mind. I mean, yeah. I've been part of a lot of shows, luckily, knock wood. And, to have a group that is this genuinely tight and loves each other so much is so rare. I mean, there's always like, oh yeah, my show's my family. No, this show, this group is, we are chosen family. Beyond
that's how I feel. I feel what you just did where you were like, you know, everybody says their show's a family. I feel like I always have to throw that disclaimer out. Like, no. I don't think you get it. We're not like, oh yeah, we're a family because that's what, you know, we get along and that's what we need to say and we want people to watch our show. No, we're a family. We are it is an unbreakable bond that I feel like we knew was there even in the beginning. This isn't something that like I feel like just over time we've been like, wow, you know, we've really developed these friendships. Right. No, it was like day one. I remember the first time I read with James. So I got the script for Psych, but they were like, oh, but this isn't your character. I remember that. And so I was like, but it's a serious detective. And, you know, which is why I was kind of like, they're never going to see me for this. And then I got to the point of reading with James, and the scenes were different. Steve wrote Juliet scenes.
Yeah, they were the scenes just for the Juliet. Just yeah. For the audition, right?
And I remember reading with James, and it was like, oh gosh, I would be so lucky to be able to work with somebody like this. Like he went off book a little, like he did with you, which I kind of liked and I hung in with, but at the same time, I was also like, you know, the scenes were.
I'm 25.
I know. I'm 25. What do I do? Do I go with him or do I read what's on the page? Because I've been told I should read what's on the page. You know, we're told that
right.
most of the time. Like, but I think now it's a little easier. But and the scenes were so cute. It was the diner scene. And of course, James didn't use the voice he used in the show, but he used a version of it, which obviously made me laugh. Yeah. And I remember when I walked out, it was like me and I think one other person at this point, at like the testing point, which as you've explained and we've explained in all of these, like how nerve-wracking that experience is. And I still every step of the way couldn't believe. I'm like, this is a joke, right? Like I'm literally being brought in to be the like the options so that they have someone they can say no to because they always want options at the network. I'm like, I must be the yeah, exactly. So I had already decided I was the option girl, which is why I was sort of like, okay, I'm not even going to put too much into this. But then by that point I was like, oh my gosh, I really now I between Steve and James and this whole feeling. And then as I walked out, James gave me the biggest hug. He was so sweet. And I was like, well, shit, this was the greatest test experience I've ever had. Too bad I'm not going to get to do it. And then I think, and it took days because they had to get a hold of, like, I got word that, like, I had been approved by some people, but it, I think at the time it was Bonnie Hammer was, like, traveling or something, and she has to be the last person to sign off on it. So I had, it was one of those, like, agonizing few days, like, wait situations, and then.
Which just bugs my mind. They didn't make it. I can't believe they didn't hire you in the room.
They couldn't because, you know, it was a different test. It wasn't like everyone from USA was in there. It was like they filmed it, I remember, and then there were several people. But it wasn't like the whole – there was something going on. I can't remember. It must have been like a holiday or something, and they couldn't get everybody in the room. So they had to watch the tapes, as they say. I don't even think I was totally conscious of it at the time, but this sort of feeling of like between – trying to make a different decision career-wise and being told to make a different decision, this thing coming along, it being in Vancouver, and just life in general at the time was very up in the air and confusing and wild. So our Vancouver-LA flights probably didn't start until season 2 or 3, so we'll get to those stories. Tim and I used to have Tim, because he's the best, greatest father, husband, like,
aww,
he would fly home if it was, I mean, he would bust it to try to make the last flight on a Friday if we had, if we had to work Friday and Monday, but often, you know, we didn't have the schedules James and Dulé had, so we would get lucky to have a Friday or Monday off, and I think you even told them at one point, like, please, you know, if you can.
And the RADs were great with the schedule, like, please let me get me at it.
Be with my family.
Said as quick as I can so I can make this flight or that flight or the morning flight.
Right.
And then same for like if I can get a Monday out so I can fly up late on a Sunday.
I loved it. I remember you used to be like, which we should save these stories for like later in the seasons too when they were happening. But I remember we would like, we'd take a flight. We'd have like a Bloody Mary on the plane. I hope Allison, I'm sorry. Breakfast cocktails on a 6 a.m. flight. We would fly back to L.A. And I'd be like, oh, I can't wait to land and go take a nap and sleep the rest of the day before I see my friends tonight. And you'd be like, I have to go to a kid's birthday party the second we land. I don't know how you did any of it. You were amazing.
Caffeine and bourbon, I would say, was probably how I did it.
Yeah, that it was a good cocktail for you. I used to think that. I'd be like, oh, my God. I'd just be waking up from a nap and be like, wow, Tim's been at a birthday party, kid's birthday party for the last 4 hours. He's that amazing. That poor son of a bitch. Okay, so I'm sort of going back now to, like, speak now to try to keep some – but all I want to do is tell fun stories.
Okay, hang on. So let me – before you go back to speak – so, again, talk about our first – and then even when we were in this last movie back in June – way back in June, which is like so long ago.
Way back then.
We're driving down the street and I was like, oh, there's the church. So I took a picture of the church where we first did our first scene and sent it to you.
Yeah, that was I have
this amazing photo of you, a little video in the church and we were waiting to go into that scene.
So I keep
trying to send you, but
the sound doesn't work.
The sound doesn't work.
It was back when we had like blackberries and palm trios, like back when
it's an old Nokia flip phone.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Maggie Lawson is the reason I actually ever first got a smartphone.
Am I? Wait, what did I?
You know, because you were never great on the phone because you had, I always said you had commitment issues where you can't commit to a phone call, so you're always texting. But an old Nokia was like,
I was an early decline call person. Yes. Anyway, go on.
Back in the day, you guys are like, there were phones, we had to flip them open. And then to make a letter, you had to click like 17 times. So it took me 25 minutes to text like the most simple thing about where are we having dinner.
Yes. Yeah.
And finally, as soon as smartphones came out, like, I need a smartphone. Or I think I started with a BlackBerry.
Yeah. Well, you did, because it was the only way I was going to communicate with you. So, so you got it for me. Thank you.
You're right.
So yeah,
then, so that amazing group of people we had. And then after the pilot, a little ray of sunshine showed up to our show named Margaret Cassidy Lawson. And we were like, oh, this was the missing piece of the puzzle we needed. So I really feel like you were a big, you solidified that group. No, it's really true.
That's so sweet. It's so funny because I look back, even just rewatching Speak Now. Let's just talk about my hair for a second.
The tendrils?
My tendrils.
The tendrils came later, I thought.
No, I like the tendrils were season one. They were all season one. I don't know.
These sort of curled Laura Ingalls tendrils.
Laura Ingalls. I remember. I look back now and I'm like, I said, okay, when someone said, is this the hair we're going to go with for this scene? You know, it was so early. I didn't want to be like
a team player.
I was a team player. I didn't want to be difficult. But I look at it now. Couple things. One, the tendrils. I don't know detective wise what we were thinking there, but that's okay. My hair was down, which I think I did request. But I feel like I look like I'm dressed up like in my dad's like oversized suits most of season one.
Pantsuits weren't quite as
tailored. They weren't quite as tailored. I don't know if we had the budget yet for, like, you know, we were a new show. We were a cable show. I also feel like some of the episodes, I look like the babiest baby faced detective. So, but it worked. I'm happy. I'm so happy, obviously.
Well, O'Hara was always the sweet one of the department, I feel like.
Yeah, I was going to say your character is also kind of how you were feeling. Like, no one took you as serious at first because you were like the new young character. And I remember even in this episode, like, Sean reads your palm and he's like, you don't feel respected here.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, we have like a very intimate little scene in the cafe scene. That's right. I remember that. I feel like we had good chemistry. Like, I remember when we did the test, I remember feeling like we had this sort of natural chemistry, which obviously played out in a lot of ways over the years. Right. But
I think that was the first time you and I were ever actually on set together, was that cafe scene. Because you
Isn't
were
it funny how we remember things? Yeah. And you saw me with James?
Yeah. But the first time you and I were ever acting in a scene together was definitely
the church.
Now in the Black Eyed Church, yeah.
Okay, that's so funny. I remember that as day one, beginning of everything was, and so in my head, I it feels like it was my very first day of shooting when I had that scene with you. So the scene in the cafe, I remember. Were we at River Rock? Where were we?
Speak Now was River Rock 100%.
Yeah,
which was a casino in the Vancouver area.
Which we also discovered we have in common. Actually, no, you introduced me to slot machines, Tim.
Did I? Sorry about that.
Tim is very lucky at the slot machines. I don't really know what the strategy is, because I don't really think you need one for a slot machine, but you have one.
It's just pure dumb luck.
But you're amazing. You always win. And then I started playing, and I was like, oh, I love slot machines.
I was in Vegas recently for something, I can't remember what it was. But I passed a Sex and the City slot machine. I really wanted to stop and take a picture, but I didn't have time.
All my favorite things. Vegas, slot machine, and Sex in the City. Yeah. I mean, put a glass of champagne.
We ended up shooting a lot of episodes at casinos for some reason on this show.
We did. There was another one. I remember I won some money at that one. That was like way out somewhere in the middle of nowhere. There was the one in downtown. Oh, that really kind of...
The Edgewater.
The Edgewater. That's right. Oh, we spent a lot of time there. We played poker a lot, actually, first season. Did you play poker? As a cast, like as a group. And we played with that show. Elizabeth Reeser was on it. Michael McMillan was on it. What was the name of that show?
EMTs. Yeah,
Was
it Save Me?
Save Me. That's right. And we had, that was incredible. Oh, that's a really good memory, Tim. There was another cast too. I feel like people would come through and we'd have like, I think Rosenbaum, while they were wrapping up Smallville, I think we had like a little overlap with him our first season.
Yeah.
Michael Rosenbaum.
I always saw Rosie around the hotel. And I don't remember playing poker with him. But yeah, we played poker as a cast. And We had an all-in song. Someone was going to go all-in.
Yes.
Someone was like, we were playing poker, and someone was like, okay, I'm going all-in. Then we'd all go Brooks too. I can't even sing anymore. It's like, all-in. I made t-shirts for us 1 year.
That was right. I remember Dulay came up with that song. Remember we used to play at that hotel, the Opus Hotel. This might be really boring. This is just so fun for us. I'm like, I hope anybody listening is getting anything from this. But yeah, we played at the Opus Hotel. I remember that. I had my 26th birthday party during season one. I remember.
We had so many birthday parties up there.
Oh my gosh. We had 8 years. Yeah. And
26. Jesus.
Yeah, Tim. Yeah. We had my 26th birthday up there.
We played a poker together. And then, in fact, when we were at River Rock, I believe, remember the boys would go play poker like for real because they're actually real poker players.
That's right. They went up to the poker room.
I'm just going to play slot machines with the old grandmas.
I was the same. I was like, I'm too intimidated by the poker room upstairs. I'm not going to go up there.
I can never play with those guys.
Christine Shatlin, who plays the bad guy, who plays the maid of honor, I ended up doing a Hallmark movie that she was in, and we were reliving psych stories. Just because, you know, I think first season we had a lot of like local Vancouver actors. I think we even had some that came back. I know one in particular we had come back like 3 times to play multiple. You know, Alex Ponovic, he's kind of a big guy. He was like a security guard in one episode and then a bartender in another episode. Yeah. I'm surprised we never had Christine again, but I guess because she was a bad guy, she was in jail. So she couldn't come back.
Because Lassiter put her away.
Lassiter put her away. And Jules.
Of course. Yes. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, Lassie and Jules. I remember the dumb waiter bit. One of my favorite bloopers from the show is when we have that scene where I'm going over to the dumb waiter to open it up and there's the dead guy inside. And because we're like running through like crawling all over each other. Oh yeah, spoiler alert. Sorry guys, if you haven't seen the show yet. And one of my favorite bloopers or psych outs is when you cradle James like a baby.
Yeah.
He's like hitting all the stuff and he starts crying and you're like, shh, it's okay. We had so much fun.
That scene in the kitchen when I'm busting with Sean. Sean's having one of his psychic things
and episodes.
It's Lassiter trying to control him, and Sean's just James is just hitting stuff off the kitchen accoutrement down, and it was one of the first many bits of Lassiter trying to manhandle Sean, which never worked because yesterday is so much bigger than me and so much stronger than me.
One of my favorites is one of the pilot when you have him up against the door, the cop. Your car door, and like you both like you keep trying to put him in, you keep trying to put it. Oh, it's so funny!
Oh, the car door was amazing.
Oh my god, it's so good.
At one point, finally, it starts to turn to James. Like, dude, help a brother out. Make me not look like I'm incredibly weak here. Can you just give me a little bit something? Like, don't fight me so hard, please, because I'm looking like a fool. And then, and then after that, his psychic spaz out in the kitchen is when we did the. I cradled him like a baby because I didn't know what the hell was going on. What else to do?
Oh, it's one of the greatest moments. I feel like it's one of the greatest moments, greatest psych outs, greatest bloopers. We'll put all this stuff in there. We'll have pictures too. We'll have to get the picture of of me outside the window at your house as well.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. It feels like yesterday.
The one from
Kits.
Strike Three? Or
no. Or oh, no, no. Yeah. The one from Kits when I'm looking in the window from, you know, I was like treating your window from the garden like a bar. Like I was like coming in to like get a, hey, make me a cocktail.
And then Tristan jumped up on the garden wall and like came through my kitchen window. And you're at one point, I think you're behind him trying to grab.
That's right. Oh, our dogs. I did. That's right. I remember her coming in through the window there. She did whatever she wanted. She was
a sweetie.
Oh my gosh, the sweetest. The sweetest in such a part. Oh, that year was so wild. I remember she didn't come up right away. I flew back to LA at one point to get her, to bring her back up. And I remember James and I, unbeknownst to the other one, had places in the same building, one floor apart. And I remember season one, we had dinner in Yaletown at, was it Blue Water? What was the first dinner we had? It was something in Yaletown. And I don't think any of us, like, I think that is actually the first moment I, like, really met and had a conversation with you. James and I remember, sat next to each other. It was a really long table. Kelly Kolchak was there. Chris was there. Steve was there. Like, it was the whole group. And
that wasn't Boathouse and Kits?
No. That was a different night. The first one I remember, because I remember I walked home because James was like, oh, I got this really cool apartment in this really cool building. It was a building called the Crandall. And so remember season one, I had a little loft down there.
I think I do remember that.
Maybe you didn't come down or come over as often, just because I think we ended up coming to Kits more. But yeah, and James was like, oh, I got this great place. It's really cool. Yada, yada, yada. He's like, it's in Yaletown. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'm in Yaletown. So we ended up walking back together. And I was like, well, here's my building. He's like, this is my building. I was like, oh, shit. We live in the same building. Yeah.
No, the thing I love about doing this podcast is like, I get to see you hang out with you, sort of.
I know. And we get to tell all of our stories. Like, we get to go back. It's so fun because I feel like, I mean, we've just had so much life together, and sometimes it's almost like we're in the present, and or at least within the, like, you know, near distant future or future. But to go back and really think about what all had to happen for all of us to meet, and this show, it almost feels like an understatement to call it our friendship. We really are family. You are my family.
No, family.
Yeah.
You know what Lily called you, right?
I love Lily.
Lily
so Marvelous
is always, it's always Auntie Maggie.
Oh, now you really are going to make me cry.
We were going to that party, Dan and Kate's during Psych 3.
Danny, I loved that she came to that. Yeah.
Third AD. No, she said, is Auntie Maggie going to be there? Oh, she loves you.
Lily is the best. It's so funny. I almost texted you yesterday to be like, her Instagram is my new favorite thing.
Oh, that's amazing.
I love her Instagram so much. I think she is so smart. She's so talented. Everyone should check out her art. Like, her art is unreal. There's something, I mean, no surprise, she's your daughter. But I did tell her, I was like, look, I know you're going to college. There's going to be stuff you don't want to talk about with your dad and your mom. So, you know who to call. Thank you all so much for listening to The Psychologists Are In, the Jules and Lassie episode. We are beyond excited to relive our favorite parts of psych with you all, our favorite parts being all of them. Please feel free to follow or message us on Instagram at The Psychologists Are In or our Twitter at PsychologistPod. Also, you guys, we have merch. Go to cloud10.fm/merch. to check out all of our incredible new designs just for you. Or just look at the link in our Instagram bio. Oh, and while you're at it, follow us on TikTok as well, at The Psychologists Are In. All right, we love you all. See you next week with our special guest, Corbin Burnson.
This is The Confused Breakfast,
a movie podcast creating a lot of ruckus around the world.
We talk about classic movies the same way that you and your friends talk about them,
with a little bit of film buff knowledge thrown in because we just can't help ourselves.
If movie quotes are part of your daily vocabulary,
if you like to talk about fun fan theories,
if you've always wanted to punch a movie character in the face,
we're here to podcast for you.
From Back to the Future,
Ghostbusters,
The Shining, and so many more.
Check out The Confused Breakfast wherever you listen to podcasts.